We are going to be continuing on this little choices series, 1 Corinthians chapter 7, so we want to invite you to turn there. But while you're turning there, it's time to show you a confession meme, because this was me, and this has definitely been some of you. So here we go. Here's today's meme of the week. This is me as a kid seeing who would die if the light fixture fell. Done that. Sydney she had a delayed reaction. She finally got it. She goes, oh, but since I picked that door for me, please. Thank you. So there you go. You know you've done that. You know some of you are even doing it now. The rest of the service, you're going to be trying to figure out who would die if a light fixture fell. Speaker. Now Charlie has really terrified me because I'm right underneath the big heavy speakers. Those are much heavier than those lights. So I'm going to start here. And I'm going to preach from Charlie's position right here. Yeah, that's right. That's right. That is exactly why he chose that spot. I can understand that. So you want to know one of the most universal things in the world? I'm about to tell you what I think is one of the most universal things in the world. You ready for this? It's discontentment. Discontentment. That's a big word, right? So we want to give you, this is what we're going to, this is what I think is such a big deal. Let's go ahead and define discontentment for you. We're going to define discontent because discontentment is the state of being discontent. So we'll put that, it could be an adjective. It means not content. Well, duh. Dissatisfied. Discontented. Well, duh. It can also be a noun. Well, duh. Dissatisfaction. But notice this third one, this third definition for discontentment. A restless desire or a craving it does not have. Think about that. A restless desire or craving for something one does not have. That's what being discontent is. You want to know why I say it's one of the most universal things ever? When do you think is the first case of discontentment? It's a small first case that you see of discontentment. Where is it? I'm hearing mumbling, but I think people are saying Adam and Eve, right? Because exactly what happens to Adam and Eve? A restless desire, a craving for something that they don't have. Now, it's the very first time we see it among us. But even before discontentment existed. Because that's exactly what Satan does when he rebels, when he talks some of the demons into rebelling against God as well, too. Discontent, isn't it? Think about how universal discontentment is. Man, ever since the Garden of Eden, we've been a fairly unhappy people. A people that have never fully satisfied by anything here on earth. We're still not satisfied thousands of years later. We always want something, a restless desire, a craving for something one does not have. You know, even when you're young, you know what that feels like. And think about how all the ways discontentment has been in your life. When you were young, you wanted to be older. And then when you get older, we do, right? If something's old, you want something new, you know? If it's something, you have something new, you go, but there's a new one. You go, if there's something small, we live in Texas, right, y'all? We don't like small, we like big, right? Y'all do know you live in Texas, right? Yeehaw! All right, there we go. If you got $100, you want $200, right? If you got $200, you want $500. If you have $500, you want that. You always want a bigger house than you have. Or you may go, my house is too big and I wish I had a smaller house. Or you go, I wish I had one of those fancy little vacuum my floors for me so I wouldn't have to do it. That's just a David confession because I'm in charge of vacuuming in my house. And you know what that causes? A restless desire, a craving. If you have a job, you dream of a bigger job, or you dream of a better office, or you dream of a pay raise, or some of you don't have a job, right? If you're single, you dream of being married. If you're married, you dream of, wait, no, I can't go there. But some of you, right? We live our lives in the state of discontentment sometimes. Now, if discontentment is this restless desire to have, what's the opposite of discontentment? Contentment, right? You just drop the dis. Hey, we're smart, right? Contentment. So if you're content, look at these things for you are content, you are satisfied. the nouns there, you have that lack of contentment, the dissatisfaction, or you don't have content, you don't have that restless desire or craving for something one does not have. And you know what I love about that definition? That word restless desire. The things that we desire. You know, let's be honest. We loved having the rain this morning, right? If it didn't rain today, was it going to ruin your day? Probably not, right? You weren't going to just be going over and over in your mind and go, man, I wish it rained. We need rain. And it's just what you're fixated on. This discontentment, this desire for something you'd have, but it's a restless desire. It is something that eats away at you. It is something that defines your life in some ways. We were born to understand. We're not talking about dreams. We're not talking about goals. There's nothing wrong with having dreams and goals. Those are good things. They very much are. The hope is something forward, and it keeps us working. It keeps us inventing. It keeps us striving. It keeps us innovating. It keeps us exploring. It keeps so many different discontentment that can lead in wrong directions. And I'll never forget that a thing I had read talked about five the discontentment is dragging you down spiritually. And a guy named Ray Pritchard did this. He talked about five things that show that discontentment is driving you down. Two kinds of discontentment. The first one is envy, right? Envy. Think about that. Do you have the inability to rejoice at the success of others? And y'all, can we get that on the screen for us, please? Struggle to rejoice when someone else has something good happen? Envy? What about uncontrolled ambition, right? The desire to win no matter trampled in the process. And that can even be in board games sitting around your family. There are certain things my wife will not play when my brother and I are in the room. She's a sore loser. We'll just say that, right? Uncontrolled ambition. I mean, this drive that just to no matter what, you've got to win at all costs. In a critical spirit. Do you find yourself being critical of things? Do you find yourself making hurtful, cutting remarks about other people to people? People to their face, people behind their back. Do you find yourself doing that? Sometimes if you've got that kind of critical spirit, it could be a sign that's what's driving it. You're not content in life, and that discontentment is so much a part of who you are in that moment. It's the discontentment that's driving that critical spirit, but a complaining spirit there too. Right? And that could be not just complaining, but that could also be blaming other people. That could also be not stability. Could also be not being thankful for what you have. How about this last one? Outburst of anger. It's uncomfortable for a lot of people. You go, where did that come from? Right? The outburst of anger, a lot of times, are those angry words that you're going to speak because there were conditions, something that you wanted to see that didn't take place. And all of a sudden, anger comes and you go, man, I can't believe that just came out of my mouth a couple hours ago, after you've had time to cool off, right? To think about all those things. Man, so these are signs that discontentment is affecting you spiritually. These five things: envy spirit, complaining spirit, outburst of anger. Any of those describe your week? Any of those describe your attitude this week sometimes? A little bit? Of discontentment. It's probably signs that there's something in your life that you wish was different, right? So here's the thing. How do we fight for contentment? This series about fighting for those things that make a difference in your life. And from the very start, from the Garden of Eden, contentment would have changed the world if only we could, instead of having discontentment. You with me on all that? So we're going to talk today about how we can fight to be content in our life. And I always describe the understanding of either who God is or who we are. Every sin, I think, is a misunderstanding of one of those things or both of those things. And discontentment is the same thing. So we're going to be in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 today. And it's a pretty incredible chapter. It's a chapter written by the Apostle Paul to a church in Corinth. And the chapter, Paul is answering some questions that they have had, some questions that the believers there in Corinth have put to him. We don't know exactly what is Paul's answers as he's talking about all those things. We know in a general way that there was things about marriage, there was things about divorce, things about being single. You'll see some of that. But we want to read 1 Corinthians 7. We're going to read verses 17 all the way through verse 35. So let's read that. Incidentally, it's underneath your seat. You're welcome to keep it if you need it. I'm using one of those Bibles today. So let's read that passage. Only let each person lead the life that the Lord God has called him. This is my rule in all the churches. Was anyone at the time of his call already circumcised? Let him not seek to remove the marks of circumcision. Time of his call uncircumcised. Let him not seek circumcision. For neither circumcision counts for anything, nor uncircumcision, but keeping the commandments of God, in which he was called. Were you a bondservant when called? Do not be concerned about it. By the way, bondservant means slave. It says, were you a slave when you were called? Don't be freedom. Avail yourself of the opportunity. For he who is called in the Lord as a slave is a freedman in the Lord. Likewise, he who is free, who is called, you were bought with a price. Do not become slaves of men. So brothers, in whatever condition each was called, let him let him among the betrothed. I have no command from the Lord, but I give my judgment as one who by the Lord's mercy is trustworthy. I think that in view of the present distress, it is good for us. Are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be free. Are you free from a wife? Do not seek a wife. But if you do marry, you have not sinned, and if a betrothed sin, yet those who marry will have worldly troubles, and I would spare you that. This is what I mean, brothers. The appointed time has grown very short. Those live as though they had none, and those who mourn as if they were not mourning, and those who rejoice as though they were not rejoicing, and those who buy as if they had no goods, and those who do no dealings with it. But the present form of this world is passing away. I want you to be free from anxieties. Did you catch that? From anxieties. The unmarried man is anxious about the things of the Lord and how to please the Lord. But the married man is anxious about worldly things, how to please his wife. And the unmarried or betrothed woman is anxious about things of the Lord, how to be holy in body and in spirit. But the married woman is anxious about worldly things, how to please her husband. Not to lay any restraint upon you, but to promote good order and to secure your undivided devotion to the Lord. Whew, there's a lot there, isn't there? It's a passage. You know what this is all about? Contentment. Where is it? How do you find it? How do you live your life? Not a very easy thing to do. So we're going to look at four things that Paul talked about today and how we find contentment, how we can live in contentment. And the first one is just simply to recognize that God has placed you there. Three times in verses 17 through 24, he said something. Look at this here. Verse 17, only let the person lead the life of him, right? To which God has called him. Verse 20, each of you should remain in the condition in which he was called. Verse 24, I believe it was. Yes. And for old brothers and sisters, let him remain with God. With evidently an extra period there. So you get a double period on that one. Woo, man. That principle, what he's saying? Be in the moment. This message is clear. Be in the moment. Lead the life that God assigns to you. You know what I love about this? You are unique, and God has created you, and he loves you the way you are. And he has gifted you to be in certain situations. You have strengths and weaknesses that you don't have. God has put you in a unique place, and he has equipped you to do it. How awesome is that? But so many times we catch ourselves going, yeah, but I wish this was here. I wish this was here. And what happens is we spend all of our time in our thoughts and we get so caught up in what we have that we forget about what we have. We forget about being in the moment, that moment that you have right now. This is the principle that Paul is trying to say to this right now. Now, apparently, what we can kind of see from other parts in the chapter as well, too, and in the book, some people in Corinth were accepted. They felt like they had to jettison all their old life and go, okay, I'm a new creation. That's awesome. That's great. So they kind of were just kind of throwing away everything. And look, stay where you are. Be where you are. Don't just wipe away everything and walk away from everything, but instead, let God use you where you are. He's created you uniquely. Nothing for this Corinth church that I think Paul's writing to, Paul's basically saying that nothing will prove the reality of your conversion more than you are in showing that change that Jesus has made in your life by changing the way you live. Let people see the difference. Don't just cut and run. Stay where you are. You know why? This is going to sound so funny. You know one of those things we all hate? Jury duty. Oh, how many of you hate jury duty? Jury duty? She's a weirdo, so yeah. I have to be honest, I do love jury duty. I love that. You know why I love that? Serving on juries. You know what I love about this? We need Christians serving at McDonald's. We need Christians serving as judges and as lawyers. as pastors, even youth ministers. We need Christians serving as youth ministers, right? But we need Christians as teachers. We need Christians in every part of life where God has called you. Learn to be content. Recognize that God has placed you there for a unique thing. And sometimes it's just a little shift in your thinking. Maybe you just need to get up tomorrow and go, okay, my job is a mission field. You need to view the way you see it. Let it change the way you view the people that are there. Let it change the way you see it. And Paul gives two examples, and the first is circumcision, and he's basically saying circumcision, uncircumcision, doesn't matter one way or another. And the second one, 19, but verses 21 through 23, it's a little more difficult because it involves slavery. And Paul uses that as an example. He's talking about slavery. A difficult thing for us because our view of slavery is very different than it was in the Roman Empire. Some historians say that the Roman Empire had 100 million slaves at any one time. Now, picture that. You know what that means? I'm not exaggerating. This means that in some towns, there were more slaves than free. The view of slavery was very different than this. It wasn't a racial thing. It was a different culture, it was a different society, but it wasn't a certain of that picture at all. Roman citizens could be slaves, everyone could be slaves, and everybody was slaves. And this principle that he's talking about here is just, maybe you don't like being in a position where you're the bondservant, you're the slave, but the question that I think Paul is saying is he's going, would you serve God are you going to serve God, or are you going to focus so much on your slavery that you didn't focus on God? Are you with me on all that? What you wish was different, that you forget to serve God. You get distracted from who God is. This is the principle that Paul's trying to teach us when he's talking about slavery as an example. That application is, you know, don't let slavery be an excuse to not serve the Lord. Because you know what it's really about? It's not about your sin in spite of your circumstances. Right? How many times have we gone, man, I would serve God if this was the case? I would be more faithful if this happened. I would share my faith with my family if this happened. I would go reach out to my neighbors if this happened. Man, we spend a lot of time on that. We spend a lot of our time what-ifing our own ministry, what-ifing our own lives, and we go, but what if this happens, right? So if God has called you to share the gospel, what if they ask me questions I don't know, so I'm not going to do it? It could be so hard. But y'all live in that moment and be in that moment and recognize that God has placed you. We tend to think that if our circumstances would change, that we could be happy, then we could serve God the way we should. But that's not the case that Paul's saying. He's saying, don't worry about your circumstances. The truth is that, you know, sometimes on the flip side too, sometimes we think that a change in our circumstances make us happy. Right? Here's the second principle that I think we're going to see in verses 25 through 28. That change can be good, but change isn't always, not always an improvement. Now notice, we define discontent as that restless desire for something that one doesn't have. We all want change in our life, this present distress that they have. Right? So apparently there was some sort of particular pressure on that church. No telling if it was just some distance to the church. We don't know what's going on there. We don't know the particulars, but Paul's advice is clear here. Don't go out and make any drastic changes. Right? He says, okay, if you're in the middle of a storm and the seas are rough, which kind of describing that present distress, if you're in the middle of a storm, it's not the time to lack of a better term. I think that's what Paul is saying here. He's saying, stay the course. Says, so if you're married, stay married. If you're single, stay single. You do need to acknowledge in verse 28, he adds that very practical word that says, look, yet, those of you, you know, but if you do marry, you haven't sinned, right? Marriage is not a sin, because my wife's watching online. I need you to understand. Marriage is not a sin, right? But Paul's making this thing that, this case, he goes, all this turmoil and so much going on. How many times when everything seems to be going wrong in our life, we go, okay, if only this were to happen, then I would be happy. The truth is, it's so important that you recognize this. You do not need to think that marriage is going to make you happy. You do not need to solve all your problems. How about this one? Don't go into marriage thinking it's going to bring you closer to God. Because what are you doing? You're relying on someone else. You're going, dude, you and I, we need to talk. Don't think that marriage is going to make you a better person. Don't think that marriage is going to fulfill all your dreams. It won't. It's great. I highly recommend it for most people. But at least in this current situation that Paul's talking about, in that present distress, he goes, look, It may be better because so many of them were going, man, if only I could be married, then I could be happy. Then I could be fulfilled. My problems would be gone away. I could grow closer to this. If you are miserable as a single person, how can you be sure that you'll suddenly be happy if you get married? Right? I need to quit talking on that, don't I? Discontented, especially in marriage, you just need to fix in that marriage. No, the problem is with people. Maybe not even with the marriage. If you can fix the people, you can fix the marriage. But yet, so many times we think, oh, if only this guy. This third thing, which leads us kind of to this third thing, which is, I think, is where Paul's going to go in the next three verses as well. He wants you to remember where your home is. He wants you to remember that you're a visitant on earth. You're not a permanent resident. And notice these two phrases. This is what I mean, brothers. The appointed time has grown very short. The first phrase in this little part about remembering where you're from, remember where home is just temporary, says, the time is grown very short. It reminds you of how brief life really is. You know, it's how quick life really goes. Isn't that the case? And that second phrase, this world is passing away. It's a Greek expression that means something like, you know, this world is like a shadow. It's not the reality, but it's just kind of the shadow that's cast. I can make a shadow. That shadow is not me. It's not. See, I'm making a shadow on the ground right now because of these lights. That shadow isn't me. This is me. So this principle that Paul's talking about here in this life, this is just the shadow. What you are living in right now is not meant to be the end-all be-all. It's just not. This phrase is such a that needs to color the way we see the world. And Paul fleshes this out in five different ways in verses 29 through 30. The first one was he talked about the relationship. From now on, those of you that have wives should be as though they had none. That's not saying ignore your spouse, y'all. That's not what he's saying at all, right? Contentment. This is a passage about remembering where home is in this. And he says, look, you should, if you have wives, it should be like you don't have one. Weddings. I've never shared that one at a wedding, ever. I don't think I ever will. Rusty, you ever done that one at a wedding? No? What are the odds that you would do it?
1 out of 10.
1 out of 10. There you go. All right. We're going to, the poor person that Rusty's going to do their next wedding, because we may do that. Anyway. You don't hear that very much, but or your wife, but it's saying recognize that this is just a temporary thing, right? He talks about hard times and sadness. He says those that weep as if they didn't weep. He doesn't even necessarily say about hard times and sadness, but he talks about good times and happiness because he includes the other side. Those who rejoice as though they did not rejoice. So you've got the hard times and rejoicing, and Paul's going, look, you need to live your life like those circumstances aren't the reality, right? He talks about our stuff in verse 30. Those who... He talks about our view of the world also in verse 31, those who see the world as though they did not make full use of it. His point is this, don't let this world... The message is you're not going to be here forever. There's a world outside of this, there's a world beyond this. It is recognizing that all of this is just temporary. So in January of 1956, there was a married couple that are on, Jim and Elizabeth Elliot. Some of you have heard those names before. Some of you may not remember the story, but in case you don't remember the story, let me tell you the story. They were there to try and evangelize a certain group called the Aka Indians of Ecuador. And the Akas actually killed five missionaries, including Jim Elliot. The Indians that were there in Ecuador, they were afraid of the missionaries. They thought the missionaries knew the danger that they were facing, and they tried to take as many precautions as they could. But in the end, five of them ended up being killed. And what was fascinating is that those five missionaries, this huge groundswell of young people, began to volunteer for missionary service. And in her book, Through the Gates of Splendor, Elizabeth Elliot, Jim would have about this. And she actually says that here's one of the things that Jim said. Jim said, if it's the will of God, darling, I am ready to die for the gospel. And what's so fascinating is Jim Elliot did lay his life on the line and he did die for the Akas people. Why was he willing to do that? This isn't home. This is just temporary. This isn't home and we're not there yet. And what Jim Elliot and four others, all these people started volunteering, and the Akas people began to recognize that there is a God there, the faith because of that. Now, Jim Elliot passed away in 1956. You know, granted, I know time's very different in heaven, but if you could ask him, what do you think his answer would be? Yep. I think his answer would be, yep. Y'all, contentment is found when we remember where home is, and this isn't it. We're not there yet. We're in the car driving. We aren't there yet. This isn't home. It's just the shadow of what's to come. And Paul is saying, look, if you want a true contentment, if you truly want to be content with life, you don't want that restless searching for what you don't have. It's that recognition of what you don't have right now, but you will have because you know where home is. And all the problems that we face, all of this, this isn't home. It's just not. And then the last thing that we see in verses 32 through 35 that I think Paul's pointing out is he points out that God is the source of freedom from discontentment. If you want to find contentment, it's found in God. This is where in these verses that Paul points out that singles have freedoms that married people don't have, right? That's simply what he's saying. Paul wants us to understand that the greatest calling in life is to serve, as he says in verse 35, have your undivided devotion to the Lord. That's the goal that Paul has for people. That's the goal. And he says, look, if you're single, it's easier for you, right? Because you don't have a spouse that you're fighting with to try and importance and priorities and those types of things. And he goes, look, if you're single, it's easier for you. It can be easier. If you're married, well, yeah, it could still happen as well too. But you need to recognize that God is the source of your content, not your spouse. I'm going to say that again. God is the source of your content, not your spouse. And that's what Paul is trying to say. So if you're single, praise God. If you're married, praise God. If you're married, love your spouse, pray for your spouse. Build up that relationship. Make sure that God is the center of it. Make your marriage a form of worship. But if you're, that's the goal. The goal is this, that undivided devotion to the Lord. And there are so many things that want to divide our devotion to the Lord. I know I've shared this thing that I saw a lady who had tweeted out a while back, or I guess it's now called X. So do we say X'd out? I don't know how you say that now. Anyway, someone who had put on Twitter, this lady said, here's my dating philosophy. And I love her dating philosophy. She said, I'm going to run as fast as I can towards Jesus. And if there's a guy that can catch up, I'm going to introduce myself to him. I thought, that's pretty good, isn't it? Right? I love that. That's kind of what Paul's point is here. He's going, look, if you're both running towards Jesus, if he is the source of your contentment, your marriage can be awesome and it can be great. But make sure that your marriage, make sure that all those things that you're going through are not where you're trying to find contentment. So I want you to think here for a minute. If I were to ask the question, what is it that really makes you happy? What is it that makes you feel satisfied? What would that answer be? Paul's goal is, he goes, man, I want that to be God. I don't want anything else to be the first thing that pops in your mind. I want it to be your relationship with Jesus, because that's where contentment is really, truly found. So this kind of interesting passage, an interesting chapter that was dealing with a very specific few situations, and Paul even goes, look, I'm giving advice here. This isn't from God. This is just me, but here's my advice. It's good, and I think there are things we can get out of that, but it's all about contentment, and it's about where we truly get that from. And I think it's so important that we recognize that you are in a unique position that no one else in the world is. No one else has your friends, your job, your family. You have been uniquely created by God, and you are in a position that nobody on this planet is. And God has placed you there for a reason. We need to remember that. We need to recognize that we can serve God wherever we are right now. We can glorify God wherever we are right now. And honestly, being discontent, being that restless pursuit of what we wish was different in our lives, it causes problems in our spiritual life. It causes problems in our walk with God. Y'all, fighting for contentment is a fight worth having. It's worth doing. So don't let discontentment be your companion this week. Let's find contentment. Let's let God do that. Let's recognize that, let's be present. Let's live in that moment that God has placed us. Let's let God define our life, not our circumstances and all the things around us. We need to remember that a change in our circumstances isn't necessarily going to bring us the happiness we think it will or the satisfaction that can be found only in that relationship with Jesus. And don't forget that you're not here forever. It's just a shadow. Let's work for what matters. Let's work for what is going to go into eternity. Let's let the actions we take tomorrow have echoes that are going to last into eternity. Let's live our lives that way. Let's find our contentment in Jesus and just watch everything else take place around us. So let's pray as our praise team's coming forward. Father, thank you that you help us understand contentment in a way that we couldn't outside of you. Remind us of who we are this week. Remind us of how you want to use us this week. Remind us of the people that you have brought into our lives that we get to share the gospel with this week. Remind us of the people when we're walking in Walmart, how we can make or break someone's day, even with a smile or an angry word. So help us to find our contentment in you, and then help that just to spread to our friends, our family, our coworkers, everyone that we're going to see. Help our contentment not to be wrapped up in anything else but you. And then we can know what being content truly is. Remind us of that this week. In your name we pray. Amen.